Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The state medical examiner will identify a man killed in a fire in West Fairbanks this past weekend. Alaska State Troopers report that the body of a deceased adult male was found outside a burning motorhome on Cormorant Street Saturday. Four local fire departments responded to the early evening incident. Chena Gulfstream Fire and Rescue Chief Frank Bracken says the motorhome was completely incinerated. He says several dogs found at the property, some loose, others tied outside, were picked up by a local rescue group. A deputy fire marshal is investigating the fire's cause. A local environmental group is concerned about impacts of bus and other permitted traffic on the regulated portion of the 92-mile road into Denali National Park. Denali's Citizens Council board member Nancy Bale says questions surround the adequacy of a vehicle management plan implemented 6 years ago, which de-emphasizes a seasonal limit on traffic.
And instead use a scientific system of indicators and standards to determine whether levels of bus use were impairing park resources.
Bale says that's of particular concern as tourism increases in the Denali Park area.
Unless, you know, the public insists on adequate implementation of the plan, it could be a free-for-all given the increase in private development at the gateway.
A 10,500 vehicle season limit established back in the 1980s was exceeded in summer 2015, and recent years' totals have hovered near the old cap. While the focus of the vehicle management plan is more on wildlife impacts, it does include a limit of 160 vehicles per day.
160 is really high, and I'm not sure we would actually meet our standards if we did have 160 vehicles on many days.
Denali National Park Science and Resources team leader Dave Schierichauer says the number was set high to accommodate heavy truck traffic during major construction projects and that the normal daily tally peaks at about 120. Numbers aside, Schierichauer says most wildlife protection standards are being met.
There are a couple of places where we're failing, and in particular, the most challenging of any of the standards within the vehicle management plan to meet is the sheep gap.
Sheep are the park's species most susceptible to disturbance, and Schierichauer says the sheep gap requires hourly 10-minute gaps in traffic at five locations along the park road. He says most problems occur in morning hours as more buses head out the road.
And so we're working with our stakeholders, namely our transportation partners, to try and switch the pattern of traffic a little bit away from the morning and more into mid and late afternoon. And we believe that will help us meet the sheep gap standard.
The standard was one of a few issues identified by the DCC in a letter to the park superintendent this fall. The group's Bale also points to the slow calculation and release of vehicle counts and impact data.
We're concerned that the data isn't coming forth quickly and that actions aren't being taken quickly.
The Park Service's Schierichauer responds that the agency is improving the vehicle tracking system at the Savage Creek Check Station, where traffic regulation begins. Changes, he says, will speed tabulation of data. As far as public information goes, he says traffic data is always available by request and that annual traffic scorecards are posted online by year's end, followed by full reports the following spring. The farm bill Congress passed last week is broad-reaching. It increases subsidies for farmers and legalizes industrial hemp. But for Alaska, the bigger impact might be what the bill does for fish sticks served in school lunchrooms. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin explains.
The National School Lunch Program has for decades required school districts to buy American-made food. But Senator Dan Sullivan says that doesn't always happen when it comes to fish.
There was a major loophole, that allowed, for example, Russian-caught pollock processed in China with phosphates sent back to the United States for purchase in the U.S. school lunch program.
Let me break that down. Rather than buy fish sticks made of Alaska pollock, many school districts buy fish caught in Russian waters that are frozen, sent to China, thawed, chopped up, plumped up with additives, refrozen, and sent to the U.S. And it qualifies for a product of USA label because it's battered and breaded here. Aside from being bad for Alaska's fishing industry, Sullivan says the twice-frozen Russian pollock is bad seafood, and kids won't like fish day at school.
Literally turns a generation of kids in America off of seafood when they have this and as fish sticks.
Alaska pollock producers have been working on this problem for years. Jim Gilmore of the At Sea Processors Association says up to half of the pollock served in schools now is from Russia. Gilmore credits Sullivan for getting a provision in the farm bill that closes the school lunch loophole.
We wanted it to be unambiguous, absolutely clear that product has to be U.S. harvested seafood in order to qualify for food purchases for school when you're using federal dollars.
Gilmore says an exception remains, allowing school districts to buy foreign product if it's substantially cheaper.
But we're confident we can be competitive on price.
The pollock producers didn't fight this battle alone. They joined forces with American producers of applesauce, canned peaches, and dozens of other stalwarts of the school lunch tray. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The annual Christmas in Ice event is open in North Pole. The holiday ice carving display and contest is back despite a downturn in donations to the nonprofit that runs it. KUAC's Robin reports.
This family from Seattle spent most of their time at the park on the 100-foot-long slide made out of ice. Linda Hilliard, a board member of Christmas in Ice, says the slide is not just for kids.
I think we had a 90-year-old lady go down. People don't realize when they come in that it's for adults. They're giggling when they leave as much as the kids are.
It's so fun, I want to do it again.
The nonprofit park is in its 12th season, embracing the Christmas theme with its own carving competition. It's open for 5 and sometimes 6 weeks through December and into the first part of January, depending on the weather. They plan to be open Christmas Day and late for fireworks on the last day of the year. Hilliard says expenses are high, but the community has been generous.
Every nonprofit is feeling the crunch of bigger donors, reducing their dollars they can give away. But the in-kind donations have just been poured onto us this year.
Carvers from Harbin, China, add the finishing touches on the front wall of a maze made of ice. Christmas in Ice board members, however, know there might come a time when international carvers won't travel here. So they're mentoring new carvers this year with 2 workshops this Sunday afternoon.
We're teaching our youth from ages 13 and up how to carve. People with artistic ability may not realize ice is a wonderful medium that they can use.
Mentoring new carvers elevates the connection to the community, she says, and keeps the interior as Alaska's ice carving capital. Christmas in Ice has a competition, yes, and is a nonprofit, yes. But it strives to distinguish itself from that other nonprofit ice carving competition in Fairbanks, Ice Alaska.
We are separate, and people don't realize that. It's run entirely by volunteers, entirely by donations, but it is a North Pole event.
Oh, and a reminder. Hilliard says she's surprised how many folks don't dress warmly enough for an outdoor winter park full of ice.
Ice is cold. You have to dress warmly.
Christmas in Ice can be found between Santa Claus House and the Reindeer Barn at 101 St. Nicholas Drive in North Pole. It's offering 2 sessions of ice carving workshops this Sunday, December 23rd, from 11:30 to 1 p.m. and from 1:30 to 3:30. In North Pole, I'm Robin.
And I'm Dan Bross.